You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
All right, family, we are getting into our mental health chat for this morning. And this month, we're moving on to a new subject. We're talking about PTSD, all right? That is post-traumatic stress disorder, all right? And Juan Royf from the Vista Clinic will be joining us for this conversation. So trauma comes in many forms, and so does PTSD. While many associate it with combat veterans, the truth is PTSD can stem from a variety of life experiences. And so today we explore some of the most common causes and why some people develop PTSD while others don't. And of course, you are invited to engage with us in this conversation if you have anything to share on +27734703520. Like I said, Juan Royf joins us from the Vista Clinic, and he presents psychoeducational groups at Vista Clinic. He provides employee wellness support and forms part of the Vista Academy team, in which he assists with community groups and CPD centers, right? And so with 15 years with emotional trauma intervention experience, 4 years lecturing experience, and 5 years psychoeducational experience, he is the best man for this job. Juan, good morning and welcome to the Mid-Morning Empowerment.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to gaining a whole lot of insights and education on this subject. So thank you so much for your time and allowing us to pick your brain about the subject that you clearly know a whole lot more about than any of us. So could you maybe just start by giving us a definition of what exactly is PTSD and how it differs from the everyday stress and anxiety that most of us experience?
Yeah, sure. I just thought I'd ask you to stop me if I give you too much information. But yeah, essentially, post-traumatic stress disorder is a mental health condition which falls within the anxiety disorder group. And people experience this disorder when they have been exposed to or witnessed even a traumatic event. Now, you know, we can discuss what exactly constitutes a traumatic event, but maybe that's a call or a discussion for another day. The thing about PTSD is once it's set in, people experience intense, disturbing, or what we call intrusive thoughts, which means that essentially what happens is I will be, let's say, washing the dishes.
Okay.
And all of a sudden I'm thinking of the, let's say, armed robbery that I saw or was part of the other day. Mm-hmm. It can cause nightmares, flashbacks, and sometimes people underestimate the power, if I can call it that, of flashbacks, in that when we experience a flashback, especially one having come from a traumatic event, one basically relives that traumatic event, which essentially then with PTSD, the more flashbacks I have, the more I, to put it plainly, re-traumatize myself on a daily, hourly, weekly basis. Mm. And if we were to distinguish that from your normal daily stressors or your normal so-called anxiety, I say so-called because I don't want to go and confuse it with anxiety disorders, it's simply duration, it is symptomatic, it's the impact that it has. And you know, with stressors and anxiety, they usually come and go, and usually the impact is not that detrimental to our daily functioning. Whereas with PTSD, it usually lasts quite a while, months, sometimes even years. For some people, it's kind of a lifelong battle. And the impact it has on our lives, as I say, with, for example, coping mechanisms, it can be quite debilitating at times. Sometimes with normal stress and anxiety, we do have some of these symptoms, hearts racing and hyperventilating and so forth. It's just so much more and so much more impactful on a daily basis with PTSD.
Sure. So the way you describe
it's a mouthful.
Let me see if I'm understanding you correctly. So out of everything that you just said, the main thing that stuck out to me when you talked about how they are experiencing that traumatic event all over again, would that be like where maybe if I think back on something bad that I experienced. And I think back on it and whatever, it might make me sad. It might bring me down a little bit. And then I move on. Whereas when it is PTSD, it's actually happening to me again in my head. I'm in that place again.
Very good insight. Yes, absolutely. It's if you want to imagine, it is basically like it's happening right now.
Sure.
Some people have physical reactions where, you know, they will fall on the ground if they experience a loud noise. You will smell the thing that happened that day. It's in your mind, it's basically like it's happening right now. And as I say, people have physical reactions to it.
That's intense. So then I'm sure at some point we're going to talk about the triggers, but can it happen without any specific like physical, like maybe without that noise, maybe a glass breaking or smelling the cologne of an assailant or things like that? Without those kinds of triggers, can it still happen? Can it just come up at any point without warning?
This is a very broad question to answer because it's a yes and no. It's a yes, it can happen, but then what happens there is it could be as little as a train of thought, if I can say it like that, that sort of spirals out of control and then sort of leads to that. Yes, exactly. It doesn't necessarily. What's an interesting tidbit, smell is one of the most strongest triggering elements that we have.
Really?
It has been reported. Yeah, it's very strange. It brings up the biggest flashbacks and the biggest triggers.
Wow.
In smell. But yeah, as I say, some people will say to you, you know, I have these triggers, I have these flashbacks, but nothing happened. I was sitting in my room, I was reading.
Yeah.
And next moment I was experiencing a flashback. And so yeah, as I say, that's why we call them they can happen.
Yeah. So can PTSD develop immediately after trauma? Does it take time to manifest?
You know, some are of the opinion that it can set in immediately. I am myself being a trauma specialist. For me, between 3 and 6 weeks directly after a traumatic event, one is dealing with, if I may call it that, normal post-trauma symptoms, which sound a lot like PTSD, but again, your severity, your impact, etc., is not as severe as full-on PTSD.
Yeah.
So after these 3 to 6 weeks, if those symptoms don't dissipate, if they don't get better, let's call rebalance to normal, then we start talking about PTSD. And then your symptoms and, as we mentioned, the triggers and the flashbacks and the perhaps sleeplessness, et cetera, that's when things start to intensify.
Okay. And what are some of the most common causes of PTSD?
Well, mainly, if I can say that, trauma. And the thing about trauma is, for you, a traumatic event can be one thing, and for me, it can be another thing.
Right.
Whereas the same thing for you cannot be a traumatic event, and for me, it could be.
Yeah.
So trauma can be very subjective. I don't know if this is maybe a bit of a rough example, but many, many, many moons ago, I was a police officer. So for me, to hear a gunshot wouldn't be that bad.
Okay.
I don't know if you've experienced that thing, but let's say you haven't. So the first time you hear a gunshot, oh my goodness, it's going to rattle you a lot.
Yeah.
So a lot of things play a role there. Let's call it training, experience, and so forth.
Yeah.
And in the same vein, having, and I think I'm jumping the gun here just a little, but it's okay. In the same vein, having experienced something and then experiencing it again will then make that ultimately so much worse. And that's something I really want the listeners to hear, with effective trauma treatment, PTSD can be prevented. It doesn't have to set in. It doesn't have to become part of your life.
Okay.
whenever people ask, I always say to them, you know, they say to me, I feel fine. I saw something, I heard something, but I feel fine.
Yeah.
And I say to them, you know, just like if you were in a little bumper basher, just go and have a look and see if you've got whiplash or not, because that sometimes bites us in the back a little while later. So just go and have it checked out. So if there's nothing wrong, there's nothing wrong. But if there is something, then we take care of it right now, and you don't sit with us weeks or months later.
That's very interesting, because using the example that you've just given, you know, with a little minor car accident, yes, there might be physical symptoms that, no, actually something did go wrong. You might not be feeling it, but yeah, when they do the x-rays, or when the doctor checks you out, realizes that, no, actually there is some issue here or there. Whereas same thing with the trauma, that you might be traumatized and not know it.
Yeah, you know, one of the strange things, and maybe those listening can identify with us, we sometimes go through things that are not necessarily, this is not only or exclusive to traumatic events.
Okay.
We'll go through something, if you've ever been for a job interview, afterwards you sit there and you think to yourself, I should have said that, I should have done this, and I shouldn't have done that. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But similar to that, when we go through a traumatic or even a crisis, we start saying what if. The mind starts saying what if in trying to process what has happened.
Right.
And there sometimes we almost uncover, unearth things that should have been left alone. Because we start, let's stick with our example, little bumper basher, and the brain starts saying, you know, yes, that was a little bumper basher, but what if it was worse? What if we lost a leg? What if we died? What if, what if, what if?
Yeah.
And before you know it, you've put yourself into such a state of anxiety.
Yes.
It might not have caused PTSD, but now suddenly you're experiencing a nightmare, or you're very uneasy. You don't want to get back into a car. So to prevent even that, it's always a good idea to just, as I say, have it seen to, so to speak.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so why is it that some people develop PTSD after a traumatic event while others don't? You talked about, you know, whether it could be a gunshot or whatever, it might be a car crash. Why does it affect some people and not others?
Again, one of the is background perception and so on. That does play a fairly big role.
Yeah.
And then, of course, part of that, people with a history of trauma, having already, let's say, if I grew up in a sort of a violent household, then a new trauma, if I can call it that, will affect me quite a lot more than the person who grew up in a sort of rainbows and roses type household.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your first responders, your military personnel, your fire, ambulance, police officers, etc., they are a little bit more at risk. So part of the reason for that is the frequency of which they come across things that we, you know, a normal guy doesn't see every day.
Yes.
Of course, survivors of violence and abuse, which unfortunately in our country we see quite a bit of abuse. People with very limited, people who are already, let me call it this, at risk. They're already going through something. They're already perhaps not having the best month, best year.
Yeah.
And then something happens, it will affect them a little bit more severely.
Yeah.
And then of course, people with pre-existing mental conditions. Again, that it kind of falls back into what I just said. That person is already experiencing something, already dealing with something.
Yeah.
So a trauma is going to affect it just that much more. And then, of course, children and adolescents, because and one of the big reasons is it's even more difficult for them to make sense of what's going on than what it would be for an adult. And one of the things that we know that children do often is we call it self-appropriation. You know, something might happen at home, and they will find a way to make it their fault somehow. And they then start and then live with guilt, and then the trauma related to that, and then they grow up with that, and then you can imagine the snowball effect of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's interesting you talk about, you know, the upbringing and childhood trauma. one might assume that when you go through childhood trauma, in some ways that makes you more resilient because of the toughness that it has taken for you to get through or to survive whatever the situation might have been. Can that still increase the risk of PTSD later in your life?
It can. It's, again, I mentioned it being a little bit trauma, a little bit subjective.
Yes.
But it does have an effect on us. And I like that you use the word survive.
Yeah.
Because if I've grown up, let's say, in a violent household, I'm surviving and I'm probably coping and I probably look like I've got everything together and I'm going to work and I'm doing everything. But I'm actually in what we call a type of a survival mode.
Yeah.
In other words, I experience things just a little bit or sometimes a lot more intense than you do. I might just want my things to be in a little bit more of an order than what the next guy does.
Yeah.
So everything, it definitely has an effect, as in I'm not living what we might consider, I don't particularly like the word, but normal.
Yeah.
I'm experiencing things a little bit more intense. Okay. I might overdo just a little bit. So yeah, it definitely has an effect.
I get you. All right. So are there any genetic or environmental factors that could contribute to PTSD?
Well, interestingly enough, we know that most of our psychiatric disorders can be caused simply by our genes, not our Levi's, but our genetics.
Right.
I like to explain it like this to the patients as well, just as some of our biological illnesses can run in a particular family, so too can psychiatric illness. And then, of course, PTSD is a disorder, so that can already be something that plays a role. Environmental, definitely. Growing up, again, in a rough household, even in a rough neighborhood, can sometimes play a role. But a person perhaps who's been bullied in school and then experiencing a trauma later. What's interesting there is if we talk about multiple traumas or earlier and later traumas, every time we go through trauma, without treatment, we don't necessarily get back to what we call optimal functionality.
Right.
It takes just that little bit sometimes a lot. It takes just that little bit of functionality down a peg or two.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can imagine a person of 30, 40 years old who has had three, let's say, traumas in their life.
Mm-hmm.
That person is definitely, if they already don't experience PTSD, they're definitely susceptible to it. Because even just from a coping mechanism perspective, they're already more on a sort of a high alert. They're already a little bit more, let's call it jumpy and careful and so on, as what the person would be who hasn't experienced that.
Right.
I feel like I'm rambling a little, but no. I hope that answers the question.
No, I get you. I think that makes sense. And it's so unfortunate when you think about the fact that sometimes there's really nothing you can do about it. You are just at more risk because of your genetics. And that's very interesting.
Exactly. As you mentioned it, I just want to make everybody aware. Experiencing trauma and experiencing the symptoms afterwards, and even experiencing the development of PTSD, it's not a sign of weakness. Mm-hmm. You're not a coward. You're not a weak person. Yeah. It doesn't mean that there's, can I say, you did or did not do something right.
Mm.
It's the same as some of us get a cold, some of us don't, some of us develop, some of us go bald. Some of us don't. You know, it's nothing you went out looking for, if I can put it like that.
Yeah, I get you.
So please, no one must feel ashamed. And sometimes that's one of the biggest hurdles in people seeking assistance, because they feel ashamed. I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to who have said to me, I should have done better. I should have known better. I should have seen the guy coming. Mm. I should have never been there. I should have done this. I should have locked the door, et cetera, et cetera. And they feel ashamed and they feel guilty. And then they go and don't seek treatment, which please don't do that is basically my message.
Yeah. That's a very important thing to point out. Thank you so much for that. And as we're wrapping up for today, how do repeated traumas, like let's say domestic violence or ongoing abuse, things like that, how do those impact PTSD development?
Well, as I say, one of the things that if I've grown up with it, if I experience it on a regular basis, mm-hmm. it just opens up the possibility for the development of PTSD, the ongoing taking away of coping mechanisms, the ongoing being in a state of fight or flight. It's not something we covered, but we go into a state of fight or flight, yeah. which is a natural reaction. And now I'm in what we call hypervigilance, mm-hmm. which means, you know, I'll check out everybody instead of just being calm sitting at a restaurant.
Yeah.
You've heard of people who say, I must sit with my back to the wall.
Yeah.
A lot of the time people make fun of those people. They're not trying to be funny. They're literally doing it to feel safe. So repeated trauma, growing up in violence or abuse, previously experienced trauma, that all opens up the possibility of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. The human The human body is a very complicated machine, isn't it?
It is. It's a very wonderful machine, but yes, very, very complicated.
I look forward to the rest of the conversations that we're going to have around this. And, you know, earlier on, you were talking about how you're careful to use the word anxiety because we throw around these words very casually. Oh, PTSD, this gives me anxiety. Oh, I'm depressed. And I think it's going to be a very eye-opening series. So I'm looking forward to this. Thank you so much for your time this morning. And I look forward to the next chat.
Thank you very much. I hope it was informative. And we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.